Do you quantum think? That's the question here on the Cycles of Change radio program here on Thursday, March 6, 2014. I'm your host, David Katzmeyer, coming to you as I do every Thursday at 8 p.m. New York time, 5 p.m. Pacific. We've been telling our listeners for quite a while that we're moving out of the old military-industrial complex of mechanized world thinkings, forms, and modalities to transcend to a merging era of intellectualism and romanticism. But it is Diane Collins that has been on the leading edge to actually define what that new era is, how and why it's coming about. Diane Collins is the author of Do You Quantum Think? New Thinking That Will Rock Your World, which starts from the premise, if quantum science has ushered in a new paradigm, and we are still pretty much in the old mechanistic paradigm, how do we not only change our thoughts to live in a new understanding, but how do we embody this new thinking in our lives? Diane lists 21 principles, which are quantum think principles, and extrapolate how to work them into your daily life. The book is an amazing achievement, one of those rare books that comes along and presents an entirely new era. Diane, who mentored with Dr. Fred Alan Wolf of the hit film What the Bleep Do We Know, is a graduate of University of Miami in philosophy and psychology and a lifelong student of Siddha Yoga and numerous leading-edge modalities and models that bring more joy to life. Her varied experiences as a Fortune 100 corporate manager, an award-winning photographic artist, and currently as a consultant to business executives and entrepreneurs all contribute to her extraordinary gift of originality and ability and express complex universal subjects in clear and powerful ways that benefit people instantly. Well, I've asked Diane to come on to the show tonight because I've been telling you all that there's music playing in the other room, and the other room is our coming future. Well, that I thought was a revelation, but here, with a mind that it brings us the sheet music to this new era, is Diane Collins. Diane, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, David. I have to say that was the most symphonic, melodious, beautiful introduction. That last analogy. Thank you.
Well, I've been learning how to quantum think. I mean, this book, it's a you can't put it down book. You make everything that was seemingly so esoteric, so understandable. So my first question I'd like to ask you, Diane, this book is so well written and so clear, so elucidating. I wanted to ask you, how did the concept of quantum thinking come to you? Was it a process of meditative experience? Was it an aha moment, as Ram Dass would say? How did this come to you, Diane?
That's a good question. I would say that it's been somewhat of a lifelong, you know, you could answer it in many dimensions, right?
Yes,
and
you do in the book itself.
I do. It's about living fully dimensionally, as I like to call it. But, yes. You know, I think I know my soul came here to discover a way that we could literally go from merely knowing what I call knowing the wisdom, what wisdom, you know, the wisdom, universal wisdom, the wisdom that we all aspire to, the great virtues, compassion, kindness of the heart, love, all the things, great things that we imagine ourselves to be. And yet what I found growing up, David, which I'm sure you did and the rest of us here in this conversation, the great discrepancies, or we could call it a tale of two realities. And so my quest was to discover, how do we go from just knowing it, 6,000 years of wisdom at the touch of a smartphone or a tablet, to actually being the walking, talking embodiment of it? And I realized at a young I would say, you know, in my teenage years when I started to really think about such matters, that it would take an awakening of consciousness, another level of consciousness for humanity. And so then it was a question of, okay, well, how does that happen? And you know, without going into every detail, because it really isn't about my story, it's about our story as a humanity, as I know that, you know, your work in calorhythms really addresses that as well. That I, you know, you come across, I studied all these things and yoga and mind, you know, science of mind and metaphysics and theosophy and, you know, all these different things. And then I came across Fritjof Capra's book, The Tao of Physics.
Oh,
and
yes,
I thought,
monumental work.
Right. I thought to myself, well, this is clever because, wait a minute, you know, people believe science in our culture, right?
Yes.
If I could use science or the language of science in some way, the discoveries of science, which we're now, you know, the book is, you know, about the re-merging, because they were never separate from the beginning until the 17th century, the industrial age, which separated them.
Yes.
That now the cutting-edge science, the quantum discoveries, were now verifying this universal wisdom, this perennial wisdom, this ancient wisdom. So I thought, well, what if I could, you know, put this all together and show, you know, have people literally experience the one reality, this greater, more expanded, more up-to-date and accurate reality. And for, I don't know how it came to me, but it's, you know, because I suppose all the great masters, the Buddha said, all that we are is a result of what we have thought. The Upanishads said it, you know, as you think, so you become. The Bibles, read both the Christian and Judaic Bibles, as a man thinketh in his heart, so is he. So I thought, okay, what does the mind do most of the time? If our thinking is conditioned, which is one of my discoveries, it, by the overarching assumptions, beliefs, ideas, notions of the prevailing worldview, then a leap in consciousness, you could say by definition, right,
yes,
is tantamount to literally taking a literal quantum leap in consciousness. So that you're looking from a system of principles, a system of thinking that is based in the more accurate and up-to-date assumptions, views, ideas, discoveries of this emerging quantum worldview, we'll call for short. And that's really, you know, I mean, that's kind of the overarching answer of it.
Yes.
And, you know, somehow one day quantum thing just came into my mind. And so I work with my husband, Alan Collins, who's my partner in everything in life. And we trademarked quantum think as the system of thinking because I decided, you know, try to make it easy for people. As you said, reading, do you quantum think? I like entertainment. I like to have fun. I don't want to be bogged down. So how does it happen? So the first way it happens is you realize we're, as you said in the introduction, David, we're in a quantum age, yet our thinking system, we're still under the influence of the way the old ideas of the industrial mechanistic age has conditioned us, even when we are, you know, conscious of becoming awakened, consciously on a path or not. Some people don't like to say they're on a path or seeking, but whatever it is, this awakening that's going on, or maybe you would put it in the terms of, you can tell me, you know, this rhythmic cycle, this cyclic activity of the, you know, mental, emotional, spiritual cycle that we're in, is going, it does require being able to look from these more accurate and up-to-date ideas, because you cannot go beyond the limits of your thinking unless you can see the limits.
One of the best titles of a book I ever saw next to Do You Quantum Think was Wayne Dyer's You'll See It When You Believe It.
Yes, that's it. No, yes. And that is really a quantum principle, isn't it? And it's, yet, you know, the thing about it is that what is the, you know, what I lovingly call the old worldview? Now, we know, what did the scientists of the time say? They declared only matter is real. Physical matter is the only reality, and it's, you know, what's the nature of it? Solid objects, that you have to exert a force, a push or pull on an object to get something to move.
Which is so why we now pronounce reality as reality.
Right. That's cute. But so
got
when
that
you
from
look
Abby
at,
Hoffman when I met him, by the way. So. Okay, go ahead. Please continue.
Funny. But when you, you know, I had, there was a, one of my fellow philosophy major who I went to college with. He opened a real estate agency, and he called it Reality Realty, just to play off on, riff on that. But anyway, and that was a real, real thing. I look at in quantum thing is not about science, although, of course, I'm, you know, mentioning the science in there, but it's about how the discoveries of science have shaped the way we think and how we can now. And I think this is really the crucial, the vital, the, you know, significant aspect of my work, David, is that I'm suggesting proactively accelerate this process of, you know, it, what I was going to say is quantum thing is about how the discoveries of science have shaped the way we think and how the new discoveries, how we can shape our own thinking so that we're thinking in sync with the world as the nature of reality, the way it is, not the way it isn't. Yeah. Now, what was the way it wasn't? Well, we know that reality is multidimensional. It's not one dimension, as they said. Only physical is real. And you look at how did this play out in even collectively in the way that our institutions got developed. And you look at the educational institution. And you look at, oh, only matter is real. Well, what do we study? We study the matter, the brain matter, maybe the electrical connections in the brain. However, in traditional education, as I like to say until now, I'm creating that it's changing as we speak, that we don't study mind. Mind was left out of the equation of the nature of reality. And yet we know the great paradigm shift in the quantum age is going from a matter-based reality to a mind-based reality. The universe as a giant machine. Now, the universe as a giant mind. Wow, that's fantastic.
I'd like to give a supportive note here with that as you continue, Diane. You know, since we're making a transition from being only matter matters, I'd like to point out that historically it took centuries for us to really think of the air as a thing in itself. It's an invisible force, but when we did think of it as a thing in itself, then we were able to create hot air balloons and rise up into the atmosphere and do aviation and everything else. And so it's understanding the invisible forces that are around us and not being limited. But we had to change our thinking before we could go to the moon.
That's exactly it.
So I don't want to interrupt you. I just want to support you.
No,
so
I don't want to
interrupt you. Pray continue the thought.
But mutual uninterruption society. But here, you know, and this is, but you're highlighting actually a very important point, which is what I call, and it's one of the quantum thing principles, the art of distinguishing, a new worldview of learning. Now, what does it mean? It means that everything exists right? Mm-hmm. In as possibility. That's a quantum principle, right? I'd call it superposition. In any given moment, there's an infinite number of ways that reality can manifest, mm-hmm. at least, you know, in our experience.
Well, this is a break from our own Newtonian models of existence, when we saw the rules that were given to us by Newton and so forth work when we're looking at perhaps the motions of the planets, we're looking at the macrosphere. But when we got down into the subatomic world, those rules just break down and they don't work. And that's where we had to come up with quantum rules, quantum physics, where things have a tendency to exist, a probability to be somewhere. This breaks from thinking of absolute space as a void and having absolute rules from them. So we are breaking away from Newton's model of the universe. We're breaking away from Descartes' absolute thought of reasoning, and we're going more into a virtual world.
Well, that's
so we have
true
to change.
Because that is really the nature of, right, the hologram, or what the Danta, they call the illusion. You know, what does it mean? It doesn't mean it's fake. I think what they meant is that it's a projection, right? We are
right.
Simultaneously, I like to say, you know, we're simulcasting reality.
And Michael Talbert said we live in a holographic universe, and we get from Sanskrit the word Maya. And they say all the world is Maya.
Exactly.
And Maya translated into English is illusion.
That it's misinterpreted as something, you know, like it's an illusion, like it's fake, like, you know, a magic trick. But I think what is meant by it, that this is the nature of reality, where we know that, you know, an object under a microscope is mostly empty space. But I wanted to get back to the art of distinguishing, because you brought up about once the nature of error was distinguished in experience, then we were able to work with it. So what I call, what is the method, you know, how do we go from intellectual or conceptual, a mental construct of the wisdom, to actually being the walking, talking embodiments of it, is that you create an experiential event within yourself. And how does this happen? This is the idea of Do You Quantum Think, by the way, mm-hmm. is that you connect to your own awareness in an awakened awareness sense as you read. That's the intent of it. It's not for information. It's for evolution. It's for transformation. So getting back to the art of distinguishing, what does it mean? It means that you bring something into your awareness in the present moment in such a way that you have a new relationship with it. So in a sense, you are giving yourself an experience, a new experience of something. So for example, we don't talk about, you know, that our thinking takes place like everything in the universe. It's a universe of whole systems. Our thinking is a system. We've been living under the illusion. In this case, I do mean illusion, like mistaken idea that we're choosing our thoughts freely, that we're independent thinkers. Well, we all like to think of ourselves that way, you know, free-spirited, independent thinkers. But the fact is that our thinking, just like the hot air balloon, our thinking takes place in a system that is, let's put it this way, the system not only allows for what we're even able to think. So the example that I use in Do You Quantum Think is the idea of a quantum leap. Now, we know that a quantum leap in science, it means an instantaneous shift of state in the orbit of the electron or the vibration of it that has no linear, visible, traceable pathway. How did it get from this state into that state, or in this orbit into that orbit?
And yet there it is.
And that there it is. And this comes from the discovery of Max Planck, father of quantum mechanics who discovered that energy doesn't move in a smooth, continuous line, but it moves in bursts, in packets of energy that he called quanta, hence the term quantum leap. So what I'm saying is you couldn't think of it. And then according to my research, this term quantum leap came into our language, into the English language, in about the year 1927. Mm-hmm. So I say, couldn't think of a quantum leap before 1927 because it had, maybe you're too young for that, but you get the idea.
The ancient Greeks used to say the beginning of wisdom is to know it something by its right name. And it's often not until we give something a name do we understand it. I want to give a little parallel support on the concept that you're suggesting here, that until we had the word quantum, we couldn't really think about quantum. I was listening to an NPR video program, and they were talking about the use of color and the absence of the word blue in ancient writings. Almost nowhere in any ancient writings can you find a reference to the color blue, although you find references to other colors, because it doesn't appear in nature. Forget about the sky. Although the sky is there, they didn't find blue objects, very rare. And there was a tribe in Namibia where they would show them squares, three green, one blue. And if you go anywhere else and you ask anybody, pick out the blue, and they would pick it out. They asked them in this particular tribe to pick it out, and they couldn't pick out the blue one. They said they were all the same. And, I mean, everybody has eyes, right? And they weren't colorblind. They didn't have a word for it. So just as they didn't have a word for blue, they didn't see the blue square. We didn't have a word for quantum because it wasn't in our morphogenetic field to be able to understand it. We didn't have it now. We didn't have a nomenclature for it. But now, as we are becoming in the 100th monkey syndrome, one person sees it, we all begin to understand it. But this is what really excites me about what you're talking about, because Deepak Chopra in an interview said that he was referring to evidence of evolution from ourselves in the anthropomorphic millennia, shows that we would crawl along at a slow ramp and then inexplicably take a leap forward. Fossil records indicate this. And then, again, we would climb for longest time and then all of a sudden take an inexplicable leap. And he claims that we are now reaching a critical mass of thought and that we are on the verge of a quantum leap right now, just as you're saying. And he believes that the transition will be from living in a world of survival of the fittest to survival of the wisest. And you've been talking about things like this since the 1990s with this book of Quantum Think. This is why I'm really excited, because you were just slightly ahead of your time, and now the world is catching up to you. This is where we're going. So tell me more.
Well, it's a very interesting thing, because, when I talk about the tale of – thank you for sharing that, and I have heard Deepak talk about that too. And, it comes to the point where people talk about, and I guess, David, I'm a little bit of a maverick in this sense, even amongst my peers, that, people talk about, you need a crisis. I say in my book, we're going to evolve. What's it going to be, crisis awakening or conscious awakening? And I'm not saying, because all of these, wonderful, lofty ideas that we're talking about, which really, we love it. It's titillating. You and I love it. The people who listen to your show, I'm sure, love it. But the fact is, we are living every day in this world. So we're looking at this, multidimensional reality. And it's multidimensional from the standpoint of eras, ERA, eras that you talk about. And it's kind of, we have to hold it all at the same time. So why do, my question, you said, what was my story? I'm looking at this and I'm saying, why do we need a crisis? Why do we have to live in the world of good and evil, even though that's a myth that, according that we've you know, arranged ourselves, oriented our humanity around? Does it always have to be that? If we literally are creating our reality, right, in some sense of that we have been given the faculties of mind with which we can create the power of intent, the use of intuition to connect into, you mentioned the morphogenetic field, or all, you know, we could say the non-local mind field, where, you know, when you start to quantum think, you realize in an everyday sense that we do exist in fields. We could call it quantum fields. You know, what is it? It's a field of connectivity. It's a field of energy informed by intelligence. It's a field of consciousness. It's a field of all of the above. And I think the connectivity is very important because, as you pointed out, you know, the 100th monkey idea, somebody has a thought, and this is what I would consider a connection point, you know, like tuning into the radio of infinite intelligence, and then others are able to tune into it. This is the art of distinguishing what you were saying. You couldn't see the color blue. Someone was able to distinguish it because we exist in fields. You say, oh, we're all interconnected. Well, in what way are we interconnected? We are interconnected through the field. So, you know, the easiest way of looking at it is the metaphor internet and the computer. So we're, you know, we have a great deal of our scientists and people thinking about, oh, well, if we change the brain, maybe. But if you think about the brain is the computer, the hardware that allows for connecting to the mind fields, to the intelligence, to this field that we are part and parcel of, that we're surrounded by. And that, like the internet, you know, infinite mind, the infinite mind of humanity, the good, the bad, the ugly, and the sublime.
Yeah.
What are you going to tune into? What are you going to connect into? Now, this becomes a very important aspect of quantum thinking, to realize we exist in fields. And I'll tell you why. Because when you look at the Buddha said, all that we are is a result of what we have thought. And mm-hmm. I like to make the distinction. First, I made the distinction relating to the system of thinking. And, you know, if thinking creates reality, what created your thinking? Then you have to look at that overarching worldview and make that leap.
Yes.
Into the quantum worldview now, more accurate, more up-to-date so far in our evolutionary stage. And then you look at, well, what's coming into your own individual mind? Because this is what you're living with, right? Moment
right.
to moment. So right. what's, you know, and I like to make this very simple distinction that I find really frees people. And that is to be able to make the distinction between a thought that you initiate, that you originate, and one that I say just visits from the surrounding mind field. Because, you know, a lot of people who are, you know, into a strong spiritual relationship, and they use languaging like, well, you know, spirit told me, or, you know, do you know what you're familiar with that kind of language?
Yes.
That people say, you know, I heard this from spirit. Okay, that's good. You got, you know, I call it, you know, the invisible tap on the shoulder. Go this way, young man, you know.
Yeah, and it seems foreign. We don't always know where it's coming from. It might be coming from another part of ourself. It may be exogenous coming into our thought. I want to comment on differentiating in a minute, but right now I want to remind our listeners, we're speaking with Diane Collins, author of Do You Quantum Think? New Thinking That Will Rock Your World. This book is a winner of the Global eBooks Award. You can find it on Amazon. You can find it on Barnes & Noble. And you can find it on Diane's site, dianecollins.com. Note that Diane is spelled with two N's. Two N's in Diane at dianecollins.com, where you can find the book, Do You Quantum Think? Dan, you mentioned differentiating thought that comes into the mind. Bringing another Sanskrit word, there is the word matrika. Matrika is an inspiration that can come into a person, not through the mind, but will come in through the fourth chakra, located right above the heart. When it comes in, I have heard this described from a spiritual being, that when it comes into the, we receive it in the heart, and then it goes up to the mind, and then the mind processes it. Yet the mind considers itself the creator of all thought that it receives. It doesn't attribute it to outside forces. So it then says, I am the originator of this thought. This thought is mine. And then it comes down to the mouth and we speak it. So we're in a bit of an illusion at that point. The mind may process many things, but it isn't the author of everything, because it does have blind spots. After all, the mind is like the eye that can see every part of the body except itself. So we have to go beyond our existence. We have to quantum think to be able to understand the very things that we hold as reality. So it is important that we differentiate. This is why I'm excited about what you're saying, Diane.
Yeah, and you know, what you're talking about, David, is a very important point, which is, what is it to think, you know, the old worldview, it was a predict and control reality. So you think, that's where that mechanism of either or, right? Conservative or liberal, black or white, northern hemisphere, southern. And, you know, there is yin-yang. That's another conversation. But let's just say from the point of view of thinking that we know that the quantum principle is a principle of both and. That two seemingly opposite events that can be true at the same time. In fact, you know, is energy, is it a particle or a wave? Well, it's both, and you can't really see the reality of it unless you see the whole picture. So part of quantum thinking is thinking from a both and. Now, let's take this to what you were saying, which I look at it like this. To be living in this expanded nature of reality is to be living in the transcendent state, that state where we ourselves as the one, the unity consciousness, the one mind, however you think of it, infinite intelligence, God, divine, the void, however one relates to that, that from which, that great mystery from which everything is derived.
Yes.
So we're living, we know, yes, that's where we're connecting. Where is that, as you say, those messages from spirit, where is it coming? That's coming in. The
yes.
Mind field, I'll talk about in a sense. And at the same time, here's the both and. You're the immanent self. The individualized persona, the personality, the various roles that we play, you know, in this play of consciousness, as I heard you mention Muktananda, Swami Muktananda, who was the former head of Siddha Yoga until he passed the body in 1982.
Yes.
But, you know, his autobiography, the play of consciousness that is going on in the worldly, everyday reality that we live in. So the idea of quantum thinking is that I consider meditation one of the five natural faculties of mind that we don't study in traditional education, as
yes,
I said earlier,
right.
Because, you know, traditional education is oriented around the physical, the brain.
Right.
And yet, now if what we need to become facile with, adroit with, are the faculties of mind, because this is what we're, you know, the clay that we've been given. So when I look at meditation, it's that or you could say the zero point state, which we say we're centered, we're focused. The beta activity, you know, the cognitive click, click, click of that part of the mind is simmered down. It's simmering. It's never a complete rest. But that meditation is a state. It's a faculty where we are, in fact, the most powerful. In Do You Quantum Think, I call this the zero point state, the power in nothing.
I like where, that. Yes, that's right.
Because that's the paradox of it. So this is the idea of living the both and life, where we become the walk. Meditation is, you know, many forms, very important, a great practice, but it's literally a faculty of mind.
And mind has to be conceived of as a viable source, you know, mind and emotion too. Let me make a parallel, if I may. You know, we have data and we have information, but then we have wisdom, which is knowing how to use what we know, knowing that we know. And a parallel between mind and heart, instead of just being physical in a mechanized world of concrete reality, as you mentioned, in your work, is, you know, for years, women always understood that emotion was a thing in itself, not just a reaction to something that was real. Growing in emotional intelligence, all boats are rising at the tide of this rising consciousness that affects everyone, and everyone, men and women both, are beginning to understand that emotion is something in itself, just as we conceive of the air as being something in and of itself, even though it is an invisible force. After all, without it, how well would we sail? Okay, now you're describing to us that thought is something in itself, that which we would call nothing. But Sanskrit tells us that all existence comes from avakya, the unmanifest, and that if you look at the Shi Chakra Yantra, which is a symbol representing the entire universe, made of triangles and concentric circles and concentric squares, the very center of that masterful symbol of yogi and Hinduism, what have you, there is but a single dot. And that dot represents Bindu, the state of nothingness from which the entire universe emerges, where you find nada, the silence from which all sound emerges, where you find the darkness, which is pregnant with light. The power of nothing is something. You understand that. And because of your work, Do You Quantum Think, we're able to understand it and in some ways realize what we already know.
That's
Am I getting
exactly
on the right track?
It. Yes, of course. And, you know, getting back to the Matrika, well, we started so many threads. I know my husband Alan is listening to this, and he was like, finish this where you started, you know.
It's a tapestry.
It's a tapestry, you know, the wandering conversation. Because we talked about, you know, when you brought up Deepak, I just want to go back to a few things. You brought up about Deepak and, you know, going from this state to this state to this state. And, you know, when you understand the faculties of mind, and that is when I have to make a distinction that when I say mind, I don't mean the cognitive. I mean the individualized form of consciousness. So, you know, that which is part of the all pervasive consciousness, what you just described so beautifully, so perfectly, poetically, and literally, we might say, the way that you just described it, David. But, you know, that this is what I'm saying about mind. What we hold in mind, what we hold in awareness is our broadcasting of reality. And as you said, it begins with that matrika. Everything begins with that sound, and it comes up and through the throat chakra and then out of our mouths in language and, you know, processed by that other part of our mind. But, you know, it's connected, and people have this I would say, a mistaken idea about mind and heart. And as you know, that the wisdom is that the mind is located in the spiritual heart, the mind in which we're talking about it. The yeah. mind as consciousness is what I'm talking about. And however, in everyday life, why does the thinking become important? Because what fills the mind, the water, right? What the container that the water is in is what the reality becomes. So it's what we hold in mind, what we hold in consciousness, and what we hold habitually, since this everything works, becomes manifest through sympathetic resonance, that what we habitually hold becomes the reality. Now, this is a very important point, you know, or I like to look at E equals MC squared,
yes.
right?
Yes.
And what we hold, we energize. What we energize, we add mass to.
That's right.
And just in a very ordinary way. So we could say, you know, and I hear about a lot of, you know, thought leaders, spiritual teachers, you know, talking about, you know, well, we're on the verge of a quantum leap in consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
This is where the maverick that I mentioned before comes in. If you are truly quantum thinking, if you're truly, and as you said, I'm not saying anything you don't know at some level of your being or able to connect to at some level of your being. If you didn't know it, you wouldn't be able to relate to it. And the reason people relate to it so well is this is what's universal in all of us. So when it's distinguished in language, in awareness, in consciousness, we relate and we have that kind of a transformational experience. But getting back, so if as long as we hold it as it's not here yet, right?
Yes.
This great leap, it's coming, you know. Well, then the laws of mind, or mm-hmm. I like to call the physics of mind, will mm-hmm. guarantee that it's never coming.
It's a self-fulfilled prophecy at that point, because it becomes like the Heisenberg uncertainty principle. If you take if you go half the distance between here and a doorway, you take that step. Then you go half the distance again, and then half the distance again. How long will it take you to get to the doorway? Theoretically, you will never get there.
Exactly.
So it's a self-fulfilled prophecy at that point, but we are on the verge and we are passing the verge. But
what if you held it on the verge, but we're actually here now? If
and don't know it, but you're helping us realize that we're here.
Yeah, this is it. If everything begins, mm-hmm. right,
yep.
as I like to say, in what way, you know, are we creating reality, right? Intent, that is the activation of the energy intelligent field. That's how I use intent in my work. It's not intention like a someday maybe goal that you want to reach. Intent, the activation through your attention and awareness, the activation of the energy intelligent field that sets up a probability wave field, right?
Yes.
In this infinitely possible universe,
yep.
you know, what sets up something to happen? Your intent in the form of thought, right?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Because you have to language it, as you pointed out.
Yes.
Experienced as the feeling tone, the resonance of your being, of your multisensory, you know, the body, or I like to think of it as all the bodies, right?
Yes. Yes.
Eventually manifest. So as you said about the Heisenberg, if we start holding it, this is where you have to fool the senses.
Yeah.
And, you know, this is where the great paradigm shift. When you think about it, and I translate matter for human terms, if you translate matter as the word circumstances, right?
Okay.
And you translate, that's the old world view. A matter-based reality, a circumstance, evidence-based in circumstance that you can see, feel, just based in the ordinary five senses, or on what has ever occurred in the past, right?
Yes.
The leap to the quantum worldview, a mind-based reality where intent is the central dynamic of creation, where you hold your awareness and attention, activating that energy intelligent field. So I say it like this, as I say for the kids, for youthful minds, mm-hmm. old worldview, circumstance rules, new worldview, intent rules. Now, what we have to realize, if we really, you know, are we ever going to really have, you know, how do we accelerate this shift, instantaneous shift? And because, as you pointed out so beautifully, it starts with the matrika and then rising up through, right, coming yes. up through the chakras and coming out
yes.
and relating to an ordinary language, that we start speaking, this shift is already now. It's not coming. It's now. And even that people say, yeah, but read the daily news and the headlines and it's like a disaster and, you know, there's so many wars and there's still too much, you know, I mean, my question, by the way, always is we need to be able to be in the right questions that if the nature of our economy, for example, world economy, is in so great weighted on the instruments of war.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, that has to be, if you want to end war, it isn't going to be because, well, it will be because we're saying we don't need war on the planet, which we don't. That's one of the old world views. Oh, well, there'll always be war. You know, there'll always be people dying of hunger. You know, these
but
are
like you
all
say, that will create that reality if we think that.
Exactly. So this is where, when I say fool the senses, go beyond the existing, the old world view, limited limits of that way of thinking.
I like to exemplify an example of that point. You know, cycles tell us that sometimes the strong will lead, sometimes the spirited will lead, and sometimes the smart will lead. It was a black and white photo I saw. It was long about 1989 or so. And the Soviet Union had gone through glasnost and perestroika, and it was going through a lot of changes. And it was under the reign post-Gorbachev, we had Yeltsin was in power then, and there was a revolt going, an uprising going on inside of Russia. And so the powers to be said, wait a minute, we're going to hold on to things the way they are. So they ordered the tanks to surround their parliament building, the Kremlin. And so the tanks were there appointed, and there were people that were saying, no, we want more of this. And the people, there were people in power saying, no, the country is better served if we keep things the way they are. So it was a classic conflict. And what happened in the standoff? Well, the revolutionaries prevailed because of what happened in this. The tanks were ordered there. The military was ordered to use force if necessary. But then the lids of the tanks opened, the drivers of the tanks. They all got out around the same time. And they sat on top of the tanks. You know why? You know why they did that? It didn't feel right. The phone. Can you imagine telling your Soviet commander? Could you imagine telling an American officer? No, sir. You know, I realize you told us that we're going to have to take the building. I realize the objectives. And yes, we do. We have deployed our forces. But I got to tell you, it just doesn't feel right.
But,
Diane,
you know,
that's
so,
what they did. And
that is so great. I mean, and that's what's going on now, right? It's
yeah.
because there is an awakening. That's what I'm saying. It's not in the future. It's now. And
you're
the
right.
more we speak it as now, the more that we can end the tale of two realities, you know, the one that we call, you know, the 3D reality that you see in the news, and realize it in the larger cycle of things.
It'll be a far, far greater thing, we think, than we've ever thought before. Oh, wait, maybe we have cycles. We're actually catching up with the past, aren't we? This is what Fritjof Capra was telling us when he would lay out a page of physics written out with all these mathematical symbols and a page of Sanskrit side by side on opposing pages of his book with footnotes underneath each one, basically revealing how they were both saying the same thing.
Yes.
In order to explain reality.
And now, right? This is it. So this is really what I, you know, this is what we're here to be, to do now, right? To be this and not wait for some, you know, people.
So we're
like
the leaders you've been waiting for,
say,
right?
The evolutionary, yeah, but it's like, you know, what I say, the paradox or the irony of an evolution of in consciousness is that we have to choose it consciously.
Yes.
And, you know, that's one of the principles in the system of quantum thinking. Conscious evolution, Barbara Marx Hubbard has her whole, you know, work is based on that. I didn't know it at the time. Talk about more, you know, 100th monkey morphogenetic field.
She talks about the memes.
People talk about the same thing. Oh, I think I heard that about you too, where someone else came up with the same cycles of rhythms at the same time you did, but they published it first or something. I don't know, but where did I hear that, Jason?
That wasn't in relation to collarbones, but you're referring to simultaneous discoveries, which have happened many, many times around
exactly,
the world.
Exactly,
in the field of biorhythm, however, that's true. We had scientists, teachers, that simultaneously discovered the 33-day biorhythm and intellectual cycle, independent of each other.
So here's the thing, and we know this from all the great, you know, wisdom traditions where they all came up with it. And now the idea was, you know, as you said, what was my story? Oh, let's use the science. People can understand that.
Yeah.
And so when you start to put this all together and then look at how do we have this work now? How do we do it as a conscious intent to do it, to do it, what? A conscious awakening, to as I have given a talk on what, the end of the great divide. What's the great divide? The idea that we think of souls that are awakening and those that are still asleep. Well, again, it's full of paradox because in order for us to have this one expanded, you know, happier reality for humanity where we are in the great exploration of what is considered a golden age in every way, where we come together in a solution-based society, where we connect heart to heart, soul to soul, where those people sitting on the tank said, you know, this doesn't feel right. You know, where we hold it, as I say, the end of the great divide, the end of which puts an end to all the divides. Because you can, when you realize how connected we are, how, you know, the old world view trained us to a conceptual basis of reality.
And the paradigm is shifting. We're moving away from not only the machine age, but the thinking that brought about the machine
exactly.
age. As you pointed out, that started out in the 17th century.
So
and you're telling us as we think we become.
That's it. So now when you realize that in order to solve the problems, you know, as Einstein, I call it the modern day mantra from Einstein, we cannot solve the problems we have with the same level of thinking that created them.
Absolutely.
That's it. So now you realize even when we awaken, you know, when we hold everyone is awakening, the world is awakening, this is the cycle we're in, it's already happening, then guess what? We're energizing that thought form and therefore producing that reality. But then there's the practicality of it. And that is what we're talking about here, where in order to think of solutions, we have to have, let's say, a container. You know, what you were talking about, the yantra, how, and I've heard some of your other shows with people who focus on the form, sacred geometry, that everything has a geometric form, that when you realize we have to have a form, a container of consciousness in the form of thinking, because that's basically what the mind does all day long, right? So yes, we're in that transcendent, beyond thinking, and immanent thinking state, simultaneously living it. But to have a container where we expand ourselves and we're living in the reality of these principles, that we exist in fields, that not every thought, this is to get return to that, to distinguish, not every thought that visits the mind field, I like to call the thoughtosphere for fun, of our awareness, maybe we didn't even choose that thought. If you were consciously awakened thinking, you wouldn't choose to have that disparaging thought.
But we can make better choices once we learn to differentiate, and we have to understand the irony of fixed form and something is fluidic. Just as you say, water assumes the shape of its container, so will what we think assume the shape of our containment of thought. Our containment of thought is based on what we are doing in a herd mentality that moves in rhythms. So those things that we hold as being fixed are actually changing all the time. That is, what we hold as being fixed changes. It's not what our ancestors held as being fixed, yet what they held as being fixed was fixed to them. It is, we sometimes don't understand that we're moving in cycles because they're so slow, and we're in it at the time. It's just like being in a galaxy. We didn't realize that the galaxies were moving in great, great cycles around in the universe because we're aboard the galaxy and we don't understand it. When I met Terence McKenna in New York during one of his lectures, he made an interesting comment. He said, whoever discovered water, it certainly wasn't a fish. So we
really,
don't realize how
it.
We
but,
are
you know, I love...
and containers at the same time, and yet you're showing us that how easily we can transcend that because our being already does.
You can absolutely. And, you know, I call my hobby is astrology, or I could say I'm a serious student of astrology for many years. And you look at, you know, what you're talking about, and I know you're talking about even greater cycles in your work. But
it's here, it's elsewhere, and the macrocosm is the microcosm.
Yeah, and we are in a cycle right now, a Pluto cycle, of which is a 16-year cycle this time, of it's Pluto and Capricorn, but it's a cycle of restructuring. Pluto is the cycle of transformation, and it's as you say, it is a long cycle, so it can take various different years. But in this one, and it started in the year 2008, which is just about the time that Obama was elected,
and the housing industry went into collapse and mortgages and so forth.
Yeah, and so what happens is it reveals, there are other cycles involved too astrologically, but basically what's going on is that a deep revealing of everything that's not working from the old structures. So we're seeing the dissolution, the dissolving of the old, so the new can emerge to make room for the new. And so when you look at this Pluto and Capricorn cycle, it has to do with government It has to do with systems and structures of a societal nature. It has to do with corporations. And so we'll see, and it's very interesting because my teacher says, every dictator, for example, as you brought up about that, is going to be, we're seeing them one by one.
Well, look at the Arab Spring that's been going on.
Exactly. So this is all part of, I like to think of it as, divine creator has the instrument of, the planetary cycles, at least for the people here on Earth. And, it's like, okay, it's like commanding the symphony, right? Mm-hmm. The symphony of the energies of the time on a somewhat local basis, meaning the Milky Way galaxy.
Yes.
And just saying, okay, now it's time to focus on this. And, when you see it, that's why I love your work, David, because when you see it in terms of cycles, then you can use the energies. This is part of living fully dimensionally, is you start to tune in to these subtle energy cycles, these energy trends, and you use everything to your advantage. And this is an aspect of what it means, do you quantum think? This is quantum thinking. It's like that you're actually living this wisdom, all of it.
And we are living the faculty. And what's interesting about Do You Quantum Think is that you're helping us to realize that we are doing this collectively. We are going through it all at the same time. We're in a sympathetic vibration, a resonance of that which is moving us collectively, and the time is now. So you have very clearly defined the aspects of that which we're moving into. So ladies and gentlemen, I invite you to do what I do. Pick up a copy of Do You Quantum Think by Diane Collins. That's Diane with two N's. And you can find her at dianecollins.com. Read about it. Read what people are saying about it. Better read it yourself. You're going to find yourself in these pages because there is something about us all for us all. Diane, I want to thank you so much for agreeing to come on to the program and elucidate our listeners and tell them a little bit more about a work that I think describes where we are, not where we're going, ladies and gentlemen, as Diane says, where we are now, if we only realize it.
Thank you so much, David. It's just such a joy to be with you.
And likewise, Diane Collins and David Katzmeier signing out for the Cycles of Change radio program. Thank you for listening. And join us again next week.